Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
People may not always see eye to eye with him, but they will always listen to his opinion. This is The Roy Green Show.
So how expensive is it really? $605 million, the G7. 2 days of gabfests, seven political leaders, $605 million. One of the political leaders, of course, not staying for the whole shebang, and that is, of course, Donald Trump. CBC reports Canadian taxpayers are on the hook for at least $21.6 million for every hour that our visitors are in town. And the first time they ran one of these puppies, the whole thing cost just $29.3 million. David Aiken from Global News is at the G7 conference. He filed this report.
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau vowed to make gender equality a focus of this year's G7 summit, and he delivered. G7 leaders announced today they would invest $3 billion to help girls in developing countries get an education and another $4 billion to help women in developing countries find work. But those accomplishments were overshadowed by U.S. President Donald Trump's saber-rattling on trade. Trump said today if a country does not do what he wants on trade, he'll cut that country off from any trade with America. As the summit comes to a close, Trump, Trudeau, and other leaders say the G7 is as strong as ever. But on key economic and policy issues, it's clear this gathering has become the G6 plus one. David Aiken, Global News, Charlevoix, Quebec.
It sure doesn't sound like a happy little crew, does it? Here's what Donald Trump had to say about Canada's relationship economically with the United States.
I love Canada, but they treat us very unfairly on trade. Very, very unfairly. You see the numbers.
Global News anchor Donna Friesen had the opportunity to speak exclusively with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. He responded to what you just heard Mr. Trump say.
We're interested in defending Canadian interests. And on top of that, turns out I'm also defending American interests, because these tariffs they're putting forward are going to hurt American workers as well. So if I can get the president to actually realize that what he's doing is counterproductive for his own goals as well, then perhaps we can move forward in a smarter way.
So if I can get the president of the United States to understand that he's not understanding, then we'll all move forward in a smarter way. Well, there's no challenge there to be responded to at all, is there? That's Prime Minister Trudeau about President Donald Trump, who's left the gathering early because of the meeting that he has in Singapore with the North Korean leader. With us is Fran Coombs, managing editor of Rasmussen Reports, a great polling firm in the United States. And Fran, of course, is also the former editor of the Washington Times. Fran, this is a conversation I've been looking forward to with you because you've witnessed the previous G7 conferences. Have you ever seen anything like this in any way, shape, or form? And how do you interpret what's going on with all of the to's and fro's and the accusatory tweets and then the accusatory verbal barrages and Trudeau telling Trump, you're not as smart as I am? What's going on?
Well, what's going to happen is the same thing that's happened in this country, is all these other world leaders are going to basically do what Trump says. Because this is the first time, I mean, you're absolutely right, Roy, we haven't seen anything like this, but the United States is now represented by a businessman and not by a government bureaucrat, and that's making an enormous difference in our trade negotiations.
So do the others just not understand, or do they not know how to react, or do they understand that Trump is essentially telling them what, in fact, has been going on?
Well, I don't fault Trudeau or any of the others. I mean, they're doing what they think is best for their country. I mean, he's representing Canada. Macron's there for France. I mean, yes, I think they're speaking in what they think are the best interests of their country. But Trump looks at these trade deals and sees the big United States trade deficit with all these countries. And as he said in his quote, he said basically the United States has been a piggy bank for all these countries, and that's over.
What's the response in the United States to what your president has been saying?
Well, I'd say the response is predictable, Roy. I mean, you follow this as closely as I do. The usual suspects who don't like Trump, don't follow the details, don't care, and hate him on no matter what he does. And the people that support him are going right on, go man, go.
Fran, is this coming down to the who's a populist and who's a globalist? Populist is a word. I don't even like the term anymore because it's become almost a negative. It's become derogatory when it shouldn't be. And nationalist has become derogatory. It's become almost an attack word. If you're a nationalist, then you must be a bigot. No, if you're a nationalist, you're a patriot. That's the way it should be looked at. But is this now breaking down into you're either a globalist or you're a nationalist, and Trump is the nationalist and the rest of them are globalists?
Right. Well, I think you hit it right on the head. Trump's called the question with his America First policies. And as you know, of course, American First has been demonized by the global elites. But Trump feels that the United States has been taken advantage of, and I think statistically you can probably make a pretty good case for that. And you had Obama, who was bowing his head to every despot and trying to lead from behind, a phrase which I always loved. And Trump is just the opposite. I mean, Trump is the strongest American president we've seen in a long, long time.
Does taking on we'll call them the G6 for a moment, does taking them on the way that Trump is taking them on, does it make sense for the United States, or is it going to potentially hurt the United States and your national economy if, as Macron has said, look, we can go on as the G6. I understand that the GDP of the United States is more than the other six combined, but is there not the potential that just shutting out these G6, and you know that's going to include the rest of the European Union, is that not going to potentially hurt the United States economy?
Well, if all that came to pass, yes, it potentially might hurt the U.S. economy, but that's not going to happen because you know as well as I do that these countries are all going to look out for themselves, and ultimately some are going to break ranks because they want to do what's best for themselves. And Trump is a very skilled negotiator and has some very skilled negotiators working for him coming out of the business community. And there's no way with it, the kind of money that we're talking about and the kind of trade we're talking about, that deals are not going to be made with the United States of America.
No, I mean, you can't. If you're another country and you're looking to make, if you're looking to have a viable economy, you have to include the United States in the picture. Otherwise, you're just going to be left behind.
Right.
Now,
Now you ask me how far can this go? Could this be bad for the United States?
Yeah.
I would say, you know, sure, that potential is there, but I think thus far, Trump has done some pretty remarkable things with the U.S. economy in a very short period of time, and I think his supporters have a lot of confidence in him.
So, Fran, the issue, though, of upsetting people who are your friends and your allies, and Mr. Trudeau, rather unwisely, went to the U.S. and went on with Chuck Todd, who we all know is as anti-Trump as you can be in American media, and started talking about how the United States and Canada have fought together side by side. And that's all true. If Mr. Trump has this attitude toward the other countries, and you might bristle at the word attitude, but if he has that attitude, does that not run the risk of upsetting allied countries? If we can just take the trade out of it for a second, just upsetting people who were generationally friends of the United States.
Again, yes, I suppose that's true, but I think we all recognize that there's a, for lack of a better phrase, a new world order going on. And a lot of these so-called allies, and many Americans feel that a lot of these so-called allies have taken advantage of us. Look at the situation in NATO where the a lot of the countries don't even pony up their share of their own defense.
That's right.
Why should the U.S. taxpayer be on the hook for the defense of Europe? So I think a lot of Americans look to that. And again, the bottom line, Roy, always is the economy. As long as our economy is getting stronger and unemployment's going down and wages are going up and things like that, people aren't going to worry too much about what Canada or the EU thinks of the United States.
And that's happening in the United States right now, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
What are Donald Trump's approval numbers like?
He's still hovering around the high 40s, around 50. He's pretty much been there since his State of the Union speech at the end of January, which got good marks from most folks for being conciliatory and reaching out to the other side. He was, like all presidents, he started in, say, the low 50s when he first took office. Then he dropped down into the low 40s, and he's gone up, say, 4 or 5 points since the State of the Union, and pretty much stayed in the high 40s, right around 50, which is a point or two, three points better, say, than Obama was at this same time in his presidency.
And I found that very interesting. I saw that the other day in one of your emails from Rasmussen Reports, that Donald Trump's approval numbers are higher than those of Barack Obama at an equal point in time.
Well, again, let's be honest here. I mean, the use of the word higher, I mean, they are up. They are higher maybe 2 to 3 points on most days. But then again, you're talking about a survey that's got a plus or minus three margin of error, too. So, yeah, he's doing a little better than Obama, but it's not dramatically better than Obama.
Okay. Now, as far as the meeting with the North Korean leader is concerned, what do you think is going to happen? Let me ask you to put your newsman's hat on. What do you expect is going to come out of that? What's the best-case scenario, and what's the most likely scenario, and what would the worst case be?
Well, the worst case didn't going to happen. I'd be stunned if the worst case happened, and that would be the whole thing blows up and nothing happens, and both of them stalk back, and Kim Jong-un starts throwing verbal bombs at the United States again, which you notice he hasn't done now for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is that they'll come out of the meeting, and there'll be more talk, but things will continue to improve.
Well, it's amazing to see this actually going on, given what Kim Jong-un had been saying until just really weeks ago.
Right.
The fact that he is now meeting in Singapore, and apparently he's terrified he's going to get killed while he's there. But I would think the security's as tight as ever been for anything.
Right.
But to have Mr. Trump meeting Mr. Un is not something we would have predicted, even with any sense of optimism, just weeks ago. So here it is.
Yeah, well, I mean, like Trump or not, he is dominating the world stage. I don't think there's any question of that. I mean, you look in the media in virtually any country in the world, and it's Trump, Trump, Trump. And so, you know, here's the dictator of this small, impoverished, nowheresville country who's meeting on the world stage with the Donald Trump. So if nothing else, he's got to feel like he's drawing more attention, his country's drawing more attention, his country's being taken more seriously. And Trump can definitely wave a magic trade wand and really improve the conditions in North Korea in a heartbeat.
Well, Fran, it's always good talking to you. Thank you so much. It's not boring. It's not dull. And it's likely not going to get boring or dull anytime soon.
No, that, I have to say, this guy, you know, not many of us thought he'd get elected president, and he did, and we have not had a dull day since.
Well, I get the sense, certainly from you, that the feeling in the U.S. is that, and the numbers, that there's no clear dissatisfaction. I mean, there are people who hate him, but there's no clear national dissatisfaction with Donald Trump when you compare him with what the numbers were for Barack Obama at, again, an equal point in their presidencies. Thank you, Fran. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, Roy.
Fran Coombs, managing editor of Rasmussen Reports, former editor of The Washington Times. Pat Cadell is going to be joining us next hour, also a pollster and a political film consultant. He served as the chief pollster and senior advisor for the Democratic Party presidential candidates, George McGovern and Jimmy Carter, and Cadell became a personal advisor to President Carter between 77 and 81. So Pat Cadell will be with us next hour, and he'll also look at this international situation, populism, the rise of national populism, the disastrous Bill Clinton book tour, illegal border crossings, and immigration issues. That's coming up. Now, it's 800-263-2428 is my number, 1-800-263-2428. The G7, $605 million is what it cost. That's just insane. $605 million. But what we've seen is this divide of these supposedly cooperative seven nations. And the argument may well be, and you may well put it forward, that Donald Trump is the reason for the divide. Trump would say, I'm looking out for the United States. We've been at a trade disadvantage with these other countries for decades. This will not go on any longer. Remember, his election slogan was Make America Great Again. So the divide of the G7 meetings in Quebec, where you have the nationalist, Donald Trump, versus the globalists, would be the others. So whose view most closely represents your point of view of what the Western world ought to do? Are you a globalist, where you believe that the national borders should essentially either disappear or not be anywhere near as significant as they are now? Or are you a nationalist who says, no, the borders are there for a reason. I represent my country. I want my leaders to represent my country. I don't want my leaders to be globalists. I want them to be nationalists. As you know, Mr. Trudeau said to the New York Times that he wants Canada to be the first post-national state. 800-263-2428 is the number. Are you a globalist? Are you a nationalist? Do you believe in a global world with no borders? Or do you believe in countries with borders that are enforced? We can also get into the issue of multiculturalism, if you so choose. I leave that up to you. 800-263-2428. Give me a call and we'll talk.
He doesn't like bullies, and he'll call them out. This is the Roy Green Show.
I'm on Twitter at The Roy Green Show, at The Roy Green Show. Emails to roy@roygreenshow.com. Then, of course, there was the Ontario election with Doug Ford, the populist, gaining victory. No great surprise. But it was the destruction of the Liberal Party and the crushing of the NDP, which really speaks volumes. I know Andrea Horvath was very excited at, I don't know what, actually. Well, they lost, they got whipped, but they had more seats than the last time. But the left was going to go somewhere, but she made it sound like they'd won. So we can drag the Ontario election into all of this. Now, the question again is, are you a nationalist? A patriot? I know there are people who hate that word. A nationalist? A patriot? Or are you a globalist, where you believe that nationalism and patriotism is a thing of the past, that there must be no borders, that global trade is what it's all about? 800-263-2428. Lots of phone calls, and we'll get to them in 10 seconds. Here's 10 seconds of what Donald Trump had to say about how the United States has been treated as far as trade is concerned.
At the top of the list was the issue of trade. Very important subject, because the United States has been taken advantage of for decades and decades, and we can't do that anymore.
It's like, we won't do that anymore. And he's told Canada and the rest of them, you'll do it our way or we'll stop doing business with you. Now, that doesn't even make sense. But you never know. As Fran Coombs said, it's a businessman who's at the controls now. The rest of them are politicians, some better than others. Mark is in Edmonton. Oh, we have to take a break. Okay, well, we'll take a break and then we'll talk to Mark. We'll come right back.
He has been called many things, but we just call him Roy. This is the Roy Green Show.
In 2014, I had the chance, the opportunity to speak with Charles Krauthammer, and we're playing back parts of the interview today and tomorrow. Mr. Krauthammer, through a spokesperson yesterday, announcing that he only has weeks to live. The cancer has spread through his body. And I found it quite remarkable what he had to say about the United States and about Canada, because, of course, he went to school in Montreal, high school, and then McGill University has a lot of love for Canada. And one of the issues we talked about was the Keystone Pipeline. Remember that? You're going to hear what Charles Krauthammer felt about Keystone in a few minutes' time. Let's get back to our issue of whether people are globalists or whether they are nationalists. Do you believe in no borders, or do you believe in real borders and everything that comes with them? Mark in Edmonton. Go ahead, sir. Thank you for waiting.
It's quite all right. No, I am definitely not a globalist. I guess by that statement, that makes me a nationalist. The gentleman I was talking to on the phone, delve into it a little more. Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with nationalism. I think there's a serious problem when you have ethno-nationalism, where you go too far one way or the other. I mean, that's where you get into a situation where you have ethnic cleansing. But the very fact that we live the way we live, using the monetary system, and the fact that there is such rampant disparity between countries, you have to have nationalism. You have to have borders, because if you don't, you have economic migrants just coming into your country, in this case in Canada, illegally through the United States. And, I mean, that's my argument for it. I can go on a lot longer, but you have other callers to reach, I'm sure.
Well, there are lots of callers, Mark, and I thank you very much for the call. I saw a diagram or a graph a few days ago, and it was by a professor emeritus. I don't remember his name or the university. Maybe other people have seen it. I saw it on Twitter. And it was all the top part of the graph represented all the people globally who wanted to emigrate or migrate to Western countries. And the bottom part of the graph represented the people who live in those Western countries. And it was a good 90-95% migrants wanting to move to Western countries versus the relatively few people who live in these Western countries by comparison. It's really interesting to look at that and see it the way it was represented. Charles is in Kitchener, Ontario. Charles, thank you for the call. Please go ahead, sir. Hello, Charles.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, sorry. This is Joe. I was going to piggyback on what Mark at Edmonton said there. I agree with everything he said. I'd be on the nationalist side. And to add what he said, right now, the only framework for globalism we have is the United Nations, and they're unelected, unaccountable. So that's pretty much what I have to say about that.
All right. Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. I am definitely a nationalist. I definitely want to live in a Canada with borders. I definitely want to live in a country that I can understand and define, and I understand where its parameters are. I understand. Look, I'm fully in agreement with trade deals and having equitable arrangements with other countries, but tearing down all the borders? I don't think so. Jeff in Edmonton. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead, please.
Pretty much agree with the other two callers. I'd go further, but there isn't a lot of time. We'd have absolute chaos. And it kind of smacks, just like Justin Trudeau, to be a globalist, because chaos can happen, and then he can toss his hands up in the air and say, well, it's out of my hands. It's all these other factors from the global community. The primary purpose of a leader of any given country is to protect their country. Donald Trump is bringing people back to that ideal that you have to protect your country first. And they have been taking advantage of the U.S. I'm kind of in a unique perspective. I'm a Canadian and an American. I've lived up in Canada since 1970. And I've seen so many times where the U.S. covers for Canada for its global security or its security.
That's been going on for decades.
Yeah, but that's the point, is that the U.S. is tired of it.
Yeah, but don't get mad at me.
Just because it's been going on for a long time doesn't excuse it.
No.
Canada doesn't put in its...
No,
economic weight behind its military.
I agree. We have never taken care of, well, I shouldn't say never, we have not recent decades, properly equipped or taken care of our military. Jeff, thank you for the call. We have not. Remember the submarines we bought? They could submerge, but they couldn't surface. Remember the Canadian soldiers we sent to Afghanistan in green uniforms? Or we sent soldiers to Afghanistan who didn't have any rifles. They were guarded by German troops. That was a weird sight for me. And now we've gone out and bought a bunch of aging Australian fighter planes. We don't do it properly. We'll take a break. When we come back, my conversation with Charles Krauthammer.